This is Mae Brussel. It is the second half of World Watchers, program number 774. And let me remind you again that starting at 9 o'clock on Monday from 9 to 10, if you can hear this program from an area where you're used to hearing it on KKUP, tune in and tape one show and listen to the other because they'll be going on at the same time where you're picking up your World Watchers program. And then you can also call in. There'll be an opportunity to call in if you have questions to ask about the material that we'll be covering each week on the talk show. Now, regarding George Shultz's comment in the newspaper of sending Gaddafi to San Francisco and giving him AIDS, there were some articles, of course, in the San Francisco Examiner. City leaders outraged over White House jokes. If these statements are true by the president and the secretary of state, I find them incredible, said John Molinari, president of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. I find them offending. Supervisor Nancy Walker said the remarks were insensitive to those who suffer from disease. It's insulting to the city. Reagan challenged the accuracy of the article. He said, I don't want Gaddafi anywhere in the United States, he said in a White House interview with editors and columnists, and being in California, that's the last place I'd send him. But it was George Shultz who said send him to California. John Wallach, the Examiner's Washington Bureau, asked Reagan whether his remarks implied that nuts like Gaddafi should go to San Francisco because that's where a lot of nuts live. He denied that also, but the conversation that was on the memos of harassing Gaddafi involved parts of the president talking to George Shultz, and the president said, why not invite Gaddafi to San Francisco? He likes to dress up so much. And Shultz said, why don't we give him AIDS? Now, as far as dressing up so much, I have pictures, one posted on my kitchen wall, of Ron Jr. wearing his mother's dress. And I mentioned on a program several weeks ago or a month ago on the Conquistadores del Cielo out of Wyoming that those are the airspace manufacturers and executives that make our Star Wars and space stations who vacation every summer together and dress up as women. And there's the notorious Bohemian Grove where Henry Kissinger and Ronald Reagan and George Shultz and Caspar Weinberger and George Bechtel and the whole gang dress up as ladies in tutus and understand there is a lot of homosexual activity that week. There are men alone there, and it's about as decadent as Nazi Germany. That's the Bohemian Grove, about 100 miles north of San Francisco. And there also were early articles in Newsweek in 1962 about a homosexual ring around Ronald Reagan and Representative Kemp from Buffalo. I have the dates. I'll look it up, and then I'll share it with you. As far as George Shultz saying, give AIDS, then he has to admit that AIDS is a biological weapon because there's no history of Gaddafi being a homosexual. And also, the AIDS is being suffered by heterosexuals, homosexuals, blacks, and spread through blood transfusions. But Shultz wanting to send him there is very important because George Shultz had three or four cabinet positions under Richard Nixon's administration from 1968 to 1974 when he was forced to resign because of so many disgraces. Nixon and Spiro Agnew worked very closely with Nazis from Germany. In Nixon's office in Whittier, he brought Nikolai Malaxa of the Iron Guard. Agnew was tied to Tom Pappas from Greece, who worked jointly with the CIA and the Nazi Greek military junta. So they are closely associated with Germans who were experimenting on diseases and genocide and have direct contacts to people with that mentality. The second point is that Elmer Bobbs is the political godfather of Richard Nixon's career, just as Patrick Frawley has been for Reagan. And he became charge of the National Cancer Institute after World War II and put OSS Chief Wild Bill Donovan on the board at the same time that the Nazis who were doing experimentations, like Joseph Mengele, the genetic experiments, were protected by American intelligence and allowed to leave to go to South America. And many of the doctors were brought to Fort Detrick, Maryland, and Los Alamos, and New Mexico, and worked with the space agencies, the CIA, the Nazi doctors. And now, third point is that at Fort Detrick, Maryland, is where the AIDS virus was first discovered, along with the Pasteur Institute in France. And they wanted to find a disease that would break down the immune system. The book, The Higher Form of Killing, describes that, and I've done a lot of broadcasts on that subject. And This Fort Detrick, Maryland laboratory was handed over to Litton Industries. Well, Litton is an offshoot of Hughes Aircraft. Howard Hughes was one of the big advisors behind Richard Nixon's career from the time he was in the Navy. And Litton Industries was behind the military junta coup in Greece, a conduit of funds that made Tom Pappas of the CIA so important. And he then in turn selected Spiro Agnew and the laboratories at Fort Detrick that were defined in quotes, the AIDS virus, were they came out of this lab that was given to Litton Biology, the Litton Genetics part of Litton Industry that actually, as I say, was an offshoot of Howard Hughes. So you have CIA Nazi teams who had devised torture and dictatorships both in Germany and in Greece. You had them linked to NATO, to General Alexander Haig, who was working as chief of staff when Nixon was moved out and would like to be president someday. The Litton Industries working on a disease that would break down and not respond, the immune system would break down. And Agnew and Pappas of the CIA and Nixon, again with Elmer Bobbs, the OSS and the CIA and cancer experiments, and George Shultz holding at least three cabinet positions, Office of Management Budget, and Secretary of Labor, and there were several other positions in the Nixon cabinet. So when George Shultz says we can send Gaddafi to San Francisco and give him AIDS, he means we can give him AIDS, that we know how to do it. And as I say, I take that literally, given the cast of characters and the background. I've done a lot of their backgrounds before, so I'm rushing through that. Now, the next crisis for Ronald Reagan this week was to set the FBI loose to find the leaks about the Libyan lies. That's where Nixon got in trouble, was with the White House plumbers who's talking about where Daniel Ellsberg's Pentagon Papers, where did they get the information, or the secrets of Southeast Asia, and the crook behavior that was behind the Nixon administration. He set up his plumbers, and that was part of his problem. Ronald Reagan is setting up a team to investigate information leaks to the media. Lots of luck. Mr. William Casey of the OSS and CIA has been trying for a long time to finger anyone who has any story about our behavior in terms of drug dealing, in terms of our links to the Nazis, to the death squads, and so forth. And when you set the team loose, they just may find something. So there may be more problems when Reagan sets his team loose. The hound dogs are out now, and the FBI is going to probe Libya disinformation leak. See, to tell us disinformation isn't wrong. To leak that the government is lying is the crime. And also, it came out that the Reagan administration had its own people leaking disinformation. So they're going to go around and around in circles, but he had to unleash those particular people. Now, another big setback for Ronald Reagan. Don't get out your hankies and cry yet. Just add up what he's done since he was governor of California. But this has been a hard week. It was so hard that Nancy fell off her chair yesterday. And I really think that the pressures are mounting because of the things that he's gotten away with that are culminating now. But he tried to not get the sanctions through in South Africa. And the thing about that particular vote is that's the vote that should have said no to the $100 million that the Contras got, because there was evidence they were planning to kill the president of Costa Rica, former ambassador, to blame Nicaragua as an excuse to invade Nicaragua, that they're into drug dealing, gun running, Nazi death squads, that they're a bunch of rotten people. He calls them freedom fighters. But our weak Congress said, okay, you can have that. But all of a sudden, they said, no, we're not going to go ahead with the apartheid. And the important thing about this vote was that the veto was had an override, but a good percentage of the GOP would not go along with Reagan anymore. Now, why now? They've gone along with everything he's done. They're conservatives. For the most part, they don't have blacks around. They don't like blacks. Why are they concerned about apartheid in Africa? I'll do more at length. I'm reading a very interesting book about Africa and Hitler and the Russians and the agreement of the Soviet Union with Hitler when the war was winding down. And a person instrumental in this policy against Reagan that would put the squeeze or sanctions on Africa is Senator Richard Lugar from Indiana. Now, this is completely out of character for Lugar, who allegedly was meeting Horacima, a Nazi war criminal in Spain, at the time that Nixon was running his presidency, his campaign, and that money was put into Swiss banks. It may or may not be true. But Lugar is using the African situation to buck up against Ronald Reagan and have America pull out of Africa, our investments and our participation, which leaves it to the broader band and the fascists. It won't hurt the government in Africa. It will only hurt the blacks. I'm not saying they shouldn't vote and have the sanctions, because the blacks can't hurt more anyway. What I'm saying is there may be more behind this than we know. And after the sanctions were, the override came against the president, they were passed, there was an interesting story in the San Jose Mercury, and a quotation of Representative Sam Gechenson, G-E-J-D-E-N-S-O-N. And he said, and this is the first time I've heard anyone oppose Ronald Reagan in these terms, he said, everyone in and out of government is going to be watching the president very closely to this one. He's a Democrat from Connecticut. He's a member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. He said, if he tries to do an end run around the law, there are going to be a lot of official and non-official people telling Congress about it. Now, that's interesting because 60 Minutes had a segment on John Singlaub on October the 5th. You may or may not have seen it. And he describes how Congress voted that we wouldn't send weapons and machinery and tactical squad, or the CIA couldn't try to overthrow, at least a year ago, the government of Nicaragua, and that it was not approved. It just was approved when this $100 million was just passed. But John Singlaub said that didn't matter. He went to the Pentagon, where he had been a general, and intelligence with the CIA and with the National Security Council, with Mr. North. And he went ahead and funded the Contras for all this time, for the past year or two, when Congress said, you can't do it. And a representative of the House of Representatives said that this is definitely illegal. We're checking into it. But the vigilance against Ronald Reagan at that time, where Congress says you can't do it, Reagan goes ahead and does it. But now they're catching on to Reagan, and that puts another bit of squeeze on him, because they say, we know you pass the laws, and this time we're not going to let you pass them over. We're going to scream and yell, and you're going to obey the laws. And the very fact that they're catching on to Reagan is a tremendous amount of pressure on him. Now, another thing happened this week that is linked to the Paris bombings. The same people involved who said soon we'll be in America doing the terrorism there. The Aryan Nations began bombing up in Idaho, and there were blasts, a few different locations of where their bombs fell. And the first story that came out September 30th, three bombs explode in Idaho City. And, of course, the FBI agent, John Campbell, said, there is no evidence to link the Nazi Aryan Nations of Jesus Christ Christian who are 10 miles away to these bombings. That's the FBI agent. But they got a phone call, anonymous phone call, that they couldn't ignore. Otherwise, the FBI would say there is no question about it, because the FBI works with this terrorism hand in glove. So by October the 4th, they seized three people involved in the Idaho bombings, and they were all part of the Aryan Nation. And I'll do more details on the arrest and the supremacists who want to form their own nation. The important thing about the Aryan Nations and Richard Butler is that he was a U-2 engineer at Lockheed in Burbank, California. He worked at Burbank the same time that Thane Caesar worked. Thane Caesar being the man who shot Robert Kennedy from the back of the head. Butler is not a minister. He wears a rag around his neck and calls it a shirt of a minister of God. Anybody can be a minister of God. And then he trains these people from the order on how to kill, and he has rifle ranges, and he has a network of computers all over the world. Now, this particular Richard Butler works with Mr. Metzger. He has television and radio shows in San Francisco, and he's active in the South. And there was talk when the trial went on in the UK, a bank robbery, that a good hunk of those millions of dollars went to Mr. Metzger, one of the Nazis here in California. Metzger has affiliations with Louis Farrakhan. Farrakhan was in the Middle East not too long ago, about a year or so ago, and picked up between 5 and 15 million from Gaddafi. But he also was linked to Jacques Cousteau and Francois Junot, the same Nazis that are doing the terrorism in Paris and calling the direct action or the leftist And this George Abdul, as I mentioned last week, is a Catholic. He's not a Muslim at all, and he's kicking up the same violence and terrorism that Adolf Hitler did in the late 30s in Paris. So I'll do more on the bombings in quite a few of them, one in North Dakota and in Idaho, and the meanings of those, because they have a direct relationship to the matter that I was sharing with you next week, and we'll do more about that. Now, another event took place this past week that is called a photo opportunity that was absolutely rare. And that was Ronald Reagan at the Jimmy Carter Library. I don't know how many of you saw it. I taped it, and if any of you want videotapes or send me a blank and the postage, maybe I should. Well, I don't have another machine to transfer to your machine, but I'll be getting one soon. And Ronald Reagan went down there with his wife, Nancy, and there was Rosalind Carter. They haven't seen each other in 5 years. They haven't spoken to each other. And Reagan gets on the rostrum and tells Carter how wonderful he was in civil rights and lauds him for his desegregating the blacks. And you realize, well, why aren't you doing it if it's a good quality, Reagan? You know. And then he lauds him for his mother going in the Peace Corps. And all the things that Jimmy Carter tried to do, Ronald Reagan was there as a diplomat, as Jimmy Carter said, I see why you won the election, because Reagan knows how sometimes to say the right words at the right time. And there was no lambasting. He went there because the Senate and House elections are in a couple of months. He went as the elder statesman talking to young Jimmy on his birthday. And then he said, I even remember how much Jimmy cares. When he heard that John Kennedy was killed, he got down on his knees and prayed. Now, there's a Jewish word or Yiddish word called chutzpah. How Reagan could bring that up at that time, I really don't know. Reagan worked with Edgar Eugene Bradley, with Patrick Frawley, who had hired Ed Butler to make a record with Oswald in New Orleans called I Am a Marxist. He was part of the fabric of the Richard Butler Aryan Nation milieu with Clay Shaw, the Birch Society, and various right-wing groups in Southern California, and then was governor. He wouldn't extradite that primary witness, Edgar Eugene Bradley, to Jim Garrison's trial in New Orleans. And I wonder if he knows where Jimmy Carter was the day Kennedy was killed. Somebody should interview Reagan and see where he was. Clay Shaw was in San Francisco, and Reagan, who was just beginning his strong political career and working for General Electric, preparing to become the president someday, knew full well what it meant to get rid of John Kennedy, because then the line of succession was Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan. And he had the nerve at this occasion to bring that up. Now, another event that took place this week, this past weekend, is the beating up of Dan Rather, which is very important. I believe it's important. CBS has been under attack for a long time, and he's had several other altercations. I was watching Charles Kuralt on Sunday, that's October the 5th. I watched the Sunday morning program, and they promoted tomorrow night there will be, you know, Dan Rather and a segment on the Aryan Nations, those people that were bombing in Idaho that link to the international network in South America and Europe. They didn't say that. They said that CBS would do a segment on the Aryan Nations. How serious are they? What kind of threat? And it's interesting that they chose to do it now, because all of the violence is taking place now are not leftists but are right-wing, and maybe they're beginning to figure a few things out themselves. That same evening, after they had announced that Dan Rather would be doing this program, or CBS, he was beaten up on Park Avenue. And you said, read the stories, a doorman saves newsman. He could easily have been killed. He was chased, beaten, and kicked by two men on Park Avenue, and knocked down and stopped some more. And the message, one man came up to him and said, Kenneth, what is the frequency? And they asked that twice. He heard them say that. Well, frequency has to do with radios, remember frequency, and it could be a mind control where they're talking on a walkie-talkie so that a getaway car could come by. When they fled down the street by foot, they could be picked up from somebody. That obviously was a message, Kenneth, about the frequency. Now, the first reports from New York, CBS, were very perplexed as to the motive for the attack. It seems to be a case of mistake identity. Now, if Dan Rather or CBS thinks it's important enough to talk about the Aryan Nations, then why can't the Aryan nations be violent like they are? The very fact that they do these things, like the Allenberg in Colorado and many, many other people that they've killed, shows how violent they are. So why would they think that there's no relationship between what they've promoted that day and what's happened to Dan Rather? And they cited several other problems he had. He wasn't robbed. They didn't take money, but they knocked him to the ground. And as I say, the assailant kept asking him, Kenneth, what is the frequency? And as I say, look up the dictionary what frequency is defined as. And one part of the dictionary describes it as a broadcasting system free of static and so forth, and the transmission of radio waves and the way it's transmitted, the signal. So when you're with a newscaster, you can talk about the frequency, and you may be talking to somebody else down the street. Now, Dan Rather, which has nothing to do with his being knocked down, but I just wanted to mention a couple of things that were interesting about Dan Rather. Dan Rather was in Texas. He lived in Dallas, Texas, before Kennedy was killed. He started working with CBS in 1962, the same year that the men from Munich, Germany, were brought to Robert Morris's home for purposes of the assassination with General Walker, but he didn't have to know them. But there are three books that describe Dan Rather in Dallas. One is called Bulletin on Dallas by John Mayo, published in 1967, and it says that Dan Rather, in that book, was off on an expressway when he heard Kennedy was killed, so he raised his hand, I guess, flagged a cab and went back to radio station KLRD. Another book by Dan Rather, called The Camera Never Blinks, said that he was nearby Dealey Plaza when JFK was shot, and in quotes, I hot-footed to KLRD, I ran to the television station. Now, the Rolling Stone in 1981, Lawrence Peter wrote that Dan Rather first heard of the shot when he was in Texas at another city visiting John Garner. So he hurried back to Dallas because he had heard that Kennedy was shot. Now, outside of Richard Nixon, who didn't know where he was the day Kennedy was shot, Dan Rather's worse than that. He was in three different places. Now, I have something to share with you that I've never had on any World Watchers program in 15 years because I have files of material from the Howard Hughes organization, from the Kennedy assassination, that I just, it was never appropriate to put on. I could have put it on, but this is as good a time as any. This is a memo from the Warren Commission. It has to do with the attorney, the chief counsel, J. Lee Rankin, writing to J. Edgar Hoover. And the first document I have is titled KRLD. That's the station where he was running to. Reel 43B, Item 4, November 24th, 1963. CBS newsman R. Hodelet and B. Eisman are reporting. And this is the item. CBS news correspondent Dan Rather in Dallas reports that he, as a longtime reporter in Dallas, recalls having seen Oswald in Ruby's Carousel Club. That's the report of these news account. Then, but, he says, Rather says, one employee said he didn't believe that Ruby knew Oswald. Now, we're talking about two different things. Rather saw Oswald in the club, but there's no proof that Ruby knew Oswald. So the report of the newsman goes on. In other words, there is no hint that the president's assassin knew the man who in turn extracted vengeance upon him. Well, there is no hint that he knew him, but by November the 24th, 1963, he was the president's assassin. Nobody else from then till now, even in Dan Rather's mind. And it isn't important whether Ruby knew Oswald. If Oswald was in the club, if Rather didn't see them talking to each other that night, doesn't mean that he didn't go there frequently or they didn't know each other. Oswald did not frequent any other nightclub that I know of in the entire Dallas-Fort Worth area. And I spent 9 years going through 26 volumes of the Warren Commission hearings and consider myself an expert on the subject. So he was not a person to go into nightclubs. So Dan Rather was telling at the News Bureau right away, 2 days after Kennedy was killed, the same day that Oswald was killed, that he had been in Jack Ruby's nightclub and that he had seen Lee Harvey Oswald in the nightclub. Now, here is the letter from J. Lee Rankin dated June the 9th, 1964. The Warren Commission began in January, and they would complete their work by August and publish it in September. Mr. J. Edgar Hoover, the director, it's written to him, "Dear Mr. Hoover, in a tape recording made available to the commission by Dallas radio station KLRD, an employee of CBS News, Dan Rather, is quoted as having told another newsman that he saw Oswald in the Carousel Club prior to November 22, 1963. The commission would appreciate your interviewing Mr. Rather to determine if he did see Oswald in the Carousel Club and the circumstances under which such statement alleged by KLRD was made by him." Why did he say that? "As provided to the commission, Rather's alleged statement is quoted on KLRD audio tape reel 43B, November 24th, 1963. So here is Dan Rather not knowing where he was, three different places when Kennedy was killed, and having seen, he said that night that Oswald was killed, that he saw him at the club, and Rankin is asking Hoover, what are the circumstances that he was there? And of course, Dan Rather, there was never follow-up. Dan Rather, I don't believe, ever had to testify. He was no witness before the Warren Commission. I know that. Now, getting to the Reagans and the pressure, there was a very funny, lighthearted comment. Mrs. Reagan, unhurt at fall of concert, she took a tumble from the stage, and she was unhurt during the concert, and Vladimir Horowitz, the pianist, helped her. And Reagan made some little joke, and she got back on her chair. That little woman is so tiny, she's wasting away. I don't know how she falls off that chair. But I believe that the pressure of these people is building up. I don't know how much a person or persons their age can have this kind of pressure. And it is very possible that she had a small stroke and then was put back up on the chair and was okay or blacked out. I'm really not sure that people like them can take this kind of barrage that's coming out, because any good investigators that go into the Challenger, and this is wide open, Senator Hollings, you know, investigation of those phone calls down there, the cause for the Challenger going up that morning, the KAL story, the true story of KAL being highly suppressed, and the role of the White House on the KAL story, and the mounting pressures of these various violences of our allies, Chile, Pakistan, and Turkey, that were not leftists, and they were not Muslims, but part of the Christian right wing, such as George Abdul in Paris, with allegiance to the Vatican and money coming from Francois Junot, which is Hitler's gold, Hitler's money out of the Swiss banks. How much of this pressure they can take, I don't know. And then added to that pressure is the opening up of the John DeLorean trial and the Klaus Barbie trial. I don't have time in the remaining few minutes to go into why they're under pressure. I've done many broadcasts on DeLorean and Barbie and their connection to each other. And if this missing money that DeLorean is charged with, that he can't account for, and I'm sure they won't make him account for it, but he has to explain the money washings from the Panama, Bermuda connections to the Lotus cars in Switzerland and so forth, that corporation GPD Services. The DeLorean connections, as I have alleged for 3 years, go to money that was demanded by Klaus Barbie for the cocaine, and the DeLorean had to pull it out of these companies and put it into the bank of Joseph Mengele in Zurich, Switzerland. As of November 1982, Barbie was brought in 83. DeLorean was arrested right in that time sequence, right in there with them. And nobody can find that money. And they had to come up with a dead Mengele, even though his attorney didn't say he was dead. The Detroit case is very interesting, and it will cause a lot of questions. He may be charged for racketeering, for taking the money, which he did. And he has an important attorney with him, Mr. Weissman, who represented Jackie Smith with the John Belushi murder. And his right-hand man through all of this is Gordon Novell, another person that Jim Garrison wanted to question regarding the murder of John Kennedy, who's worked for the Defense Department, the Defense Industry Security, and so forth. The linkage of the Barbie trial opening, and Jacques Vergne is the attorney, and the scandals that are relating to that, and the linkage to the DeLorean trial just accumulate to make a lot of big stories. The lying of the president about Gaddafi, our allies not going along with us, the president being forced to go to the summit. This has been one hell of a week in terms of news. To separate it and put it in order and realize what's going on in their heads, and here's Kissinger associates just screaming and yelling, what's the president going to do over there? It's a great time to know these people and the characters and see how they're shuffling and dancing, and it's very interesting. Read as many of these articles as you can and save them for a few years and then go back to them, because this is a rare chance to see a lot of history and double dealing in front of you going on right now. This is Mae Brussel, and I'll be back with you next week for World Watchers. Thank you for the articles and books you've been sending, and start saving some articles about these events. They're very, very important.